Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. As expected, the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates by a quarter of a point today, and the central bank telegraphed two more interest rate cuts before the end of the year. Former CDC Director Susan Manares fired by HHS Secretary RFK Jr., telling a Senate committee today she was fired because she wouldn't approve vaccine recommendations without scientific evidence and wouldn't agree to firing top CDC officials without concrete reasons.
I could have kept the office, the title. But I would have lost the one thing that cannot be replaced, my integrity.
Manera is saying that public health in the U.S. is in a tenuous position. Three police officers dead, two others in critical but stable condition after a shooting in Codorus Township in southern Pennsylvania. The shooter's dead. No more information at this time. And also in Pennsylvania, a man is in custody after he drove his car into a metal gate. It happened at the FBI building in Pittsburgh early this morning. This is ABC News.
92.7 WMDX, Madison's real news and great conversation, and home to the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
The Badgers try to regroup. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College football. After losing to Alabama, the Wisconsin Badgers hope to bounce back when they host the 3-0 Maryland Terrapins this Saturday. Badgers head coach Luke Fickell on trying to turn around the program in the NIL portal transfer era.
Whether you're playing with three redshirt freshman offensive linemen or, you know, a lot of guys that, you know, their first time playing together with us, we have to make sure that we aren't just focused on the destination. Saturday will take care of itself.
NFL, the Packers had their first road game this week. Safety Xavier McKinney says they can't overlook the 0-2 Browns this Sunday in Cleveland.
I still think they got a good team. I think if you look at their roster of who they have on their team or what they can do, they got a lot of talent. It can turn around quickly for them.
Baseball, it's the Brewers and Angels tonight in game two of that series in Milwaukee. Brandon Woodruff gets the start. Last night, Freddy Peralta pitched six innings, allowed just one run, two hits, 10 strikeouts on the way to a 9-2 victory for the Crew. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
WMDX Madison, where biking in the snow is a personality trait.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. A friend goes, "You ready for fall?" And I go, "Yeah, I'm ready for the collapse. I'm ready for democracy." He goes, "No, fall. You know, it's September." And my mind immediately goes, "Society just gonna crumble." It's where my mind initially went. And like, yeah, I guess, you know, winter's coming. It's gonna get worse. And the reason I bring this up is, I think Trump and company, they're going full tilt authoritarian. They're going full tilt fascist. Rules be damned, laws be damned, or at least the ones restraining them, and making some new stuff up. Look, Donald Trump just hit the New York Times with a $15 billion defamation suit because, well, he gave credit to the producer of The Apprentice and not to Donald Trump. The Times said that Mark Burnett was the brainchild behind it. And somehow, dear leader, that hurt his feelings. According to him, he says the paper and four of its reporters have been smearing him and saying bad, unnice things. With articles and I guess a book before the 2024 election that he was very unhappy about. You know, things calling him unfit for office, questioning his business record, which, to be honest, you know, there's a lot there to question. And if this is where we're going to go, You know, I gotta wonder what Obama's thinking, what happened to him during his term. Now, you got Trump claiming that the Times is a virtual mouthpiece for the radical left, and that they've somehow recklessly spread false and damaging stories about him and his family. And look, most of the stuff that they brought up were in his words. You know, like, if my daughter weren't my daughter, I'd be dating her. You don't need to make that up. There he is. Now he's crying. What he calls industrial defamation and libel. And he's demanding the $15 billion. Now, again, this is another shakedown, because you got to think that, you know, the Times, you know, they're not going to spend $100 billion or something. I don't know. Who knows? But this lawsuit, you know, isn't really just about, you know, the money. It's about his pride. And it's also about a massive power play. This is how you silence people. It's how you silence critics. Trump wants to fight back against what he sees as unfair media coverage. You know, an unfair narrative. His lawyers say the Times published repugnant distortions and fabrications. Again, going after a couple of their authors who dug into his finances and you know, talked about his TV. Oh, geez. I mean, I can't believe that this guy's our president. I can't believe that this guy, as thin-skinned as he is our president. Now, understand, this is classic Donald Trump. The frivolous lawsuit after frivolous lawsuit and pushing the bounds, because, hey, it really is. And the right does this masterfully. It's about just making you spend resources. It's about making you, well, organize around trying to save your behind while they're on to do other chaos. But here's the reality. For working people, people like you and me, this sounds like just a rich guy trying to silence critics with expensive legal battles. While issues that really matter to us don't get any airtime. The Times calls the suit baseless. They say that they'll keep reporting the facts without fear, and he'll keep trying to sue. So while he tries to sue and clean up his image, I got to tell you, I wonder when someone will sue for fair wages, affordable health care, a voice on the job, someone who actually looks out for working people. Because again, what you're seeing between Trump and the Times and Trump and the media as a whole is really all about power, control, and, well, his feelings. Again, remember, these are the people who say blank your feelings. Remember, these are the people who are, you know, the free speech folk. Yeah. And what's really kind of frightening about all this is there was an interesting exchange with ABC News' Jonathan Carl. And Carl asked Trump, you know, what do you make of Pam Bondi saying she's going to go after hate speech? He says, is that, I mean, a lot of people, a lot of your allies say hate speech is free speech. And Trump says, she'll probably go after people like you because you treat me so unfairly. It's hate. You have a lot of hate in your heart. And Carl goes, would that be appropriate? And Trump, you know, fires back. Well, maybe they'll come after ABC. Well, ABC paid me $15 million for a form of hate speech, right? Your company paid me $16 million for a form of hate speech. So maybe they'll have to go after you. And this is the next layer that you're seeing, censorship by employment. Because you had J.D. Vance just the other day going, well, you know, they say something bad about Charlie, call their employer. Now, remember, these are the people, these are the folks who are whining, complaining, carrying on about cancel culture. This is what they're doing. And Pam Bondi saying, we're going to go after people who say bad things about Charlie Kirk. We're going to go after those groups. And we know who those people are. Anybody who's not in the inner circle. And even some of them have got to be worried, which is why you have seen some kind of blowback, which made, you know, Bondi walk a little bit back. But understand, you know, this is who they are. This is who they've always been. And we knew this in 2024. You're getting exactly what you voted for. And when he comes for everybody, eventually they will, then you never know. Now, he was also taking questions from reporters at the White House. One of the, an Australian reporter, asked an honest question. Gotta love those foreign reporters who actually ask real questions. They asked, you know, how much wealthier are you now than when you returned to the White House? And it's a good question. How much wealth have you accumulated because of the things that you've done? How much have you gotten in favoritism? How much have you gotten in foreign countries, you know, doing all kinds of nice things? Because if you saw Jon Stewart's bit, and I thought it was fabulous, that, you know, everybody treats Trump like a Make-A-Wish kid because they all come bearing gifts. It's kind of true. But this reporter, you know, says, you know, how much wealthier are you? And Trump says, the deals I made for the most part, other than what my kids are doing, they're running my business. Most of the deals I made were before. Then turns the clock. Where are you from? The reporter said, Australia. And Trump goes, in my opinion, you're hurting Australia right now. Quiet. And I'm like, wow. Dictate much? Fascist much? And the reality is Trump himself has claimed that his personal brand is worth $100 billion. Claimed that in his defamation lawsuit. He's worth $100 billion. I'm sorry. The Forbes 400 that I saw was like 2.5 at one point. How'd he get to $100 billion? That crypto really paying off? But here's the sad reality and the bitter truth from the fields of Tioga County, Pennsylvania. Tioga County is at the top of the T in Pennsylvania. You've heard the story about Pennsylvania. You've got Pittsburgh on one end, Philly on the other, and Alabama all in the middle and around. And they call it the T. Very top of the T, you have Tioga County. A whopping 75% of the people in Tioga County voted for Donald Trump in 2024. And what you have now, according to this Politico article, you got farmers who are screaming because they got nobody to pick their farms. They got nobody to milk the cows. They got nothing. And there's part of me that goes, hey, you got exactly what you voted for. And guess what? It's a mess. The promised quick fix for farm labor, that ain't happening. Nowhere in sight. And what's happening, sadly, is farmers are seeing their livelihoods crumble. I was reading in the story, one dairy farmer had to sell off every single cow because there weren't enough workers to milk them. Others sent out jobs, you know, looking for ads. Nobody replied. This John Palmer, a three-time Trump voter, was quoted in the article saying, the whole thing screwed up. He said, we need people to do the jobs Americans are too spoiled to do. He said that. And my first thought was, you know, the reality is, you know, there are jobs that Americans won't do at the wages you're willing to pay. I would love to see his books because in the story, he talks about how he knew all the people that were on his farm working were illegal. This is the brilliant part of this, because all these people knew, they just didn't think Trump was going to come for them. They were going to go get those other illegals, you know, the bad ones. And what's happening is, yeah. And the brutal reality is the people who were cheering on Trump's immigration crackdown, hoping for, you know, 100% American labor, they've got empty fields and lost crops. And the truth is very clear. Our agricultural workforce has shrunk by 155,000 employees between March and July. And guess who those people were? Those were migrant workers. They've been deported. They've been driven away. The H-2A visa program that's supposed to fill those temporary spots, reportedly a paperwork nightmare. and doesn't cover year-round jobs like dairies, because you're supposed to go with the wave. And what you got is you got these people who have been skirting the law for years and getting away with it, now crying because the guy that they put in the White House, overwhelmingly supported, is sticking them in the behind. Now, you've got Glenn Thompson, Republican House member, agricultural chair. He's got a bunch of bills. There's some bipartisan support for some of them because we're going to fix this. We're going to find solutions. Yeah, bet on that. And what you've got is you got farmers who are, you know, they're trapped. And here's the thing. It seems like when you treat migrants, hardworking migrants, like criminals, crops seem to rot. Cows go unmilked. And people wonder why nobody wants to do those jobs for the wages these people are paying. Now, you got Painter, like I said, who voted for Trump 3 times. Now saying, well, the policies aren't right. So what you've got, Trump voters got the chaos and the labor crisis that they demanded. And should I feel sorry for that? And the answer is no. The hope is that we find a way to come back together. We find a way to throw this administration to the curb. And understand, nobody seems happy. The latest Economist YouGov poll finds Trump's approval rating now 17 points underwater. 39% approval, 56% disapproval. That's a new low. It's a new bad. And it's one of these things that you go, when do we reap the benefits of all of the chaos that, oh, that's right, we're not going to. Because when people in Tioga County, Pennsylvania, start complaining to Politico, you know it's bad. So now here's the thing, and this is where my mind goes. Here's an opportunity for Democrats to reach out to those folks. Find a way, because Trump doesn't care about them. And this is the weird part. This is where I reach out to my red hat friends all the time. Trump doesn't care about you. Trump cares about Trump. Cares about his ego. Doesn't care about you. Doesn't care about your family. Doesn't care about your kids. Doesn't care about your opportunity. Does not care. And this is where, again, I come back to the hope. The hope is we wake up. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Got a lot to get to. Right back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you can't make this up. You really can't. The Trump Department of Justice evidently just deleted the study that showed that domestic terrorists in the U.S. are most often right-wingers. The study conducted by the National Institute of Justice and published in 2024. In fact, we talked about it. They found that far-right extremist violence continues to outpace all other types of terrorism and domestic violent extremism. It noted that since 1990, far-right extremists committed far more ideologically motivated homicides than far-left or radical extremists of Islam. The study was available on the DOJ website until sometime a couple of days ago. And then somehow, who knows, just kind of disappeared. Now, the DOJ said that the removal was part of a review of the website and the review of the materials in line with recent executive orders. But that the timing, again, shortly after the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Coincidence. And they claim that by the Trump administration blaming the left for political violence led to widespread speculation that the deletion was, I don't know, do you think, politically motivated? Maybe a way to, I don't know, tap down on the message of it's crazy right-wingers with guns who have been causing a lot of problems for a lot of years. Now, the study can still be found. I think there are some archived snapshots out there. It's still available somewhere, but it's not on the DOJ's website. And understand, rightly so, this has drawn some criticism, as it should. And the fingers being pointed at political bias, something we should be talking about, because again, our dear leader, if it doesn't fit his narrative, it's got to go. So instead of his name being Donald Trump, it's really Winston Smith. I mean, we're continually rewriting history every day. Because understand, you know, this is where, you know, I'm frustrated with where we are. Kirk's murder is a tragedy. It really is. I want no one. And I've had people say, well, what about this person? What about this? If you had the chance, I don't. And I don't know what the future for this guy would have been. I don't know if he would have risen to be the next, who knows. But my conscience is not going to allow me to go there. I'm of the mindset no one should die for their beliefs. Even the ugly, absurd ones. I'm a free speech person. I think more speech is better than the censorship that we're seeing right now. What we should be talking about is the Republican machine that has been bankrolled by billionaires and pumped up by media enablers who work overtime to turn someone like Kirk into a martyr. And understand, they're going to turn him into a martyr. This is the rallying cry. And all it's meant to do is cause further division, further distraction. It's meant to tear working people apart. And for folks like you and me, again, this is another one of those painfully long stories in American history where politicians are manipulating us while ignoring our real, actual struggles. I was not a Kirk fan in any way, shape, or form. He was a guy who did crowd work, who went out and would, you know, be able to set an environment where less articulate, passionate debaters were basically sandbagged, all so they could videotape it and exploit it. But his legacy is trashing labor unions, belittling civil rights, blaming outsiders for everything that happens. And now, instead of an honest debate, now instead of actually looking at what caused all this, Republicans are throwing hundreds of millions of dollars into his sainthood. While again, workers are getting screwed. I look at Oklahoma, the whole state, because of their leaders. Moment of silence. Moments of silence all across every school. And if you speak out, you got NFL teams that are being threatened with punishment for refusing to mourn Kirk, speaking out against the... It's crazy. And I go back to what I said at the beginning. You got J.D. Vance saying, hey, you know, Call their employer if they say something you don't like. Censorship by firing. Censorship by being blacklisted or shunned. Understand, the system's rigged against working people already, and this just makes it go even further. And we know what's coming. We do, don't we? The outrage machine is just going to keep churning along. The chaos merchants are going to keep pumping out their clickbait. We're going to see more outrage. We're going to see more hashtags, more finger pointing. And oh boy, there will be investigations. There will be investigations aplenty. Benghazi on roids. And plenty of distraction, plenty of things to get mad over, plenty of things to fight with your neighbor, or fight around the kitchen table, but no solutions to anything, ever. Never a solution. Now look, Kirk's martyrdom, it's going to empower more chaos. More chaos merchants, more thought police. They're going to punish dissent. They're going to rake in billions. And oh, by the way, they're going to pass more laws that serve the billionaires and the corporations. While, again, workers work harder, longer, for less. Prices continue to go up. Bad economic policy becomes the pain and suffering that we have to go through. And look, I've been saying all along, we're going to have to go through this. Because this is where the organizing comes. The right, you have to be honest, the right has out-organized the left in enormous ways. It's time to start catching up. It's time to, standing with your neighbor, finding what solidarity means. Because understand, we're going to start seeing increased security. There'll be more surveillance. There'll be more crackdowns. And as we're organizing, you're going to be labeled a domestic terrorist because they got rid of the report that said it's them. Their goal is never about safety. It's about fear. It's about spectacle. It's about distraction. And while working people continue to fall behind, hospitals close. Wages stagnate. Houses become more unaffordable. We're going to have mandatory morning sessions for a political mouthpiece who's dominating the headlines right now. The rich are going to get richer and the poor are going to get poorer and the unions are going to get crushed. And that's by design. And Kirk's murder is going to be used to justify even more. Even more silencing of critics, more division, more blacklisting, punishing teachers, by the hundreds. We will see new laws. There will be more policing. Things will get bad. But, and this is where the great part of this is, knowing that martyrdom is their trick, our answer is solidarity. I don't mourn for their martyrs. I mourn for the working class that's been under assault for decades. And I think it's time that workers get angry in the right direction. I think it's important that we start putting our efforts and our outrage in the right direction. And it's not here. I met a person at the gas station who was wearing a I Am Charlie t-shirt. I said, what's that? Because I was curious how this person would pop off. And immediately started with the waterworks. Charlie was a great human being. And all down, all the stuff. And I'm like, did you know this person? Well, no. Did you follow them? Well, no, but, I've been told. And it's this weird kind of world. Where Charlie Kirk was a known entity to political junkies and to people who paid attention to that kind of outrage. But for the mass of the country, not really. He was a chaos merchant who went to college campuses to beat up on young people who were still trying to find where their ideology and where their belief structure is. And he was good at it. You surround a whole crowd of people to be able to move that person and to humiliate them. He was good at it. He was brilliant at it. was able to turn and pivot away from actual debate and point fingers and accuse and do the things that he did. Does it mean he should have been killed? No. But in this moment, they're going to use him. Because I had someone tell me, he's this generation's JFK or MLK. That should be frightening to everyone, especially Democrats who have not been organizing. So it's time. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Have you had any of these stories? Have you run into people who have taken the positions? I want to hear what they are. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, because I'm curious. I'm curious how many people who are showing their sympathies and especially the extreme outside displays, how many of them actually were paying attention? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
WMDX Madison, where biking in the snow is a personality trait.
You're listening to 92.7 WMDX, Madison's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels.
Mostly cloudy, isolated storms tonight, and a low in the low 60s. Partly sunny for tomorrow, still the chance of rain, high in the mid-80s. More storms around Friday, high upper 70s. Rain chances continue into the weekend. It's 67 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, why throw your hat in the ring to become governor, especially in times like this?
Folks are tired of politicians who focus on cultural and partisan issues versus delivering real results is going to change lives. And that's what we've done in Milwaukee County. And so my calling is being able to be there for people at my best when people are dealing with their worst times. And as elected officials, as community leaders, that's what we should be focused on.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some good news on Tuesday. Democratic Representative Donald Norcrest of New Jersey and Republican Pete Stauber of Minnesota, they officially introduced the Bipartisan Faster Labor Contracts Act in Washington, D.C. And you go, well, what's that? It's a piece of legislation that aims to end long delays that employers impose on employees while negotiating a first contract. You win your election. Everyone's on board. You go to sit down and negotiate to say, hey, how do we get those better wages, hours, conditions? And, well, the companies hire union busters to harass, intimidate, to draw things out, to do all of the tactics that they get away with. Now, the key provision in this is that employers would be required to begin negotiations within 10 days after a union election. And when I read this, I'm like, since Trump took office, the NLRB has lacked a quorum of 3 Senate confirmed members, meaning that it can't do anything. It can't make any key decisions. It can't resolve any disputes formally without a quorum. The ability to enforce labor law, kind of difficult. Including overseeing and enforcing compliance with what this would be, the Faster Labor Contracts Act. Now, what you have states like New York and California who have already passed laws to try and fill in the gap left by a broken NLRB. But they're being sued by the NLRB, oddly enough, because the broken NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, they are saying, yes, we're broken, but that's our work. So you can't do our job that we're not going to do. So states' rights people, this is kind of this should be in your wheelhouse, because the states should be able to do this stuff if the federal government is broken and won't. And look, as I've said a number of times, this is a perfect example of them wanting to destroy the National Labor Relations Act, but they want to keep the stuff that restrains labor. They want to keep the rules in place that keep the handcuffs on what workers can do, while trashing all the stuff that workers use to help make their lives better. This is just another perfect example. But you know, let's say in the perfect world, there's a functional NLRB, our Democrats come back in control, and in 10 days after winning an election, you got to sit down, you got to start bargaining. I like it. And it also goes on to say that if there's no agreement within 90 days, the dispute moves to a mandatory mediation session. If mediation fails within 30 days, then there's binding arbitration by a three-person panel. This is something that we talked about years ago. It's one of the things that I actually liked that George Miller, the congressman from California, when he introduced the Employee Free Choice Act, got to be, what, almost 20 years now? Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah, geez. It's one of the things, one of the parts of the Employee Free Choice Act I liked, because as someone who has helped negotiate and organize, employers just go, no, we're not. I had one guy tell me that I'll close the doors before I let these workers have a union. He's very clear about it. It's illegal, but who's going to stop it? Now, this is the part, as I said, because there are three components to the Employee Free Choice Act. There was the card check to make it easier to have a secret ballot. All you needed was 30% of people to sign cards to trigger an election, not to win, but to trigger an election. And as any union organizer will tell you, you never go into a ballot election with only 30%. But it's one of those things the employer could have. When they saw that 30% plus wanted a union, they could recognize that. You could have had that kind of, okay, we don't have to go through an election. I don't want to spend divisive money on going and getting a union busting lawyer. I don't want to harass you. You want to sit, you want someone to be your negotiator. You want to, great. There's that option. Republicans hate that option, which is why it's not in this. The other part was penalties. Three times the penalties. Because as anyone knows, it's almost political malpractice to not fire someone during a union organizing campaign, because the penalties are so pathetic. It goes like this. An employer finds out who the lead organizer is, who the most vocal union supporter is. They fire them. Happens a lot. That person loses their job. They lose access to the people that they were doing. The union usually brings them in and continues the organizing. But at the end of it, there's no job. Now you go and you fight through the NLRB. You go and you fight for a year, two, three, whatever it takes. And let's say you win. Current law says you're only entitled to getting what you've lost. So if you went and got another job, let's say you got a job paying the exact same amount, it would cost the employer nothing. Or if you went and you got a job that was making more money, the employer paid you nothing. But if you made less money, the employer only paid you the difference. So if you're making 10 bucks an hour and you got fired and you were making $9 an hour, they only had to pay you $1 an hour. So the penalty for them is very low. And what the Employee Free Choice Act said, in those scenarios, we're going to triple that. Put a little teeth into it. It's not going to stop the big boys, but it might stop some of the smaller companies who, they don't want to give away money. So that was the Employee Free Choice Act, which, Barack Obama, I got to shake his hand twice. And both times he shook my hand and said, we're going to get something better than the Employee Free Choice Act, and we sadly got nothing. And you go, well, that's, a lack of priority. That was Republicans, and it's all of that. Yes. I still stand on the ground that Obama could have pushed that through as the main priority, but instead on the labor front, went after the Lilly Ledbetter Act. For those who don't know, Lilly Ledbetter worked for, I think it was Goodyear, for her most of her career. When she retired, found out that she'd been cheated. Cheated every year of her employment. That the male supervisors were making more money and had a better retirement. And she sued. And won. But the law said she could only sue from 180 days. She could only go back 180 days, not 30 years of being cheated. And the Lilly Ledbetter Act fixed that part. And I've argued for all the people who are going, well, you're just anti-woman. No. And I'm not anti-Lilly Ledbetter. What I am is anti-women being cheated at all. You know, had you gone and gotten Lilly Ledbetter the ability to join a union, a management union that negotiates in their interest, she wouldn't have been cheated for 30 years. Wouldn't need to have the Lilly Ledbetter Act to go back and right a wrong from the past. You could have fixed it right in the moment. And that's why I'm such a big supporter of labor unions. You get to fix things kind of in the moment. So EFCO, I thought, was weak, but I'm a guy of, hey, let's get what we can. And I think this Faster Labor Contracts Act, I think this is weak too, but I'm not someone who's, it's not perfect, we're not going. Okay, great. I think anything that helps workers get that first contract is a great thing. Now, there is a time frame on this. And the sword cuts both ways. As I said during the Employee Free Choice Act fights, because there was mandatory contract arbitration in there. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants a contract imposed on them. They're going to want to get in there and hammer it out. And I think having that deadline, saying somebody's going to impose this on you because it could be good, it could be bad, that you're going to go in there and you're going to hammer something out. And this is kind of the FDR era thinking on labor management relations. Let the local workers and local management hammer it out. We can't pass laws that are going to impose our will on them. Let them work it out. And I think it's a good thing. Because the reality is, and this is one of those things that just blows your mind when you hear it. This act, if it passes, this Faster Labor Contracts Act, would write in 90 days what it takes almost a year and a half to get a first contract. I think the average was like 450 some days to get that first contract. And what happens is, we know these delay tactics, they're meant to wear people down so that they move on, they get frustrated, they leave, deny them the benefits of collective bargaining, all of that. I think this is a good thing. And look, I'm going to give Sean O'Brien credit for moving this along. It is a watered down version of the PRO Act, but again, I'm not a perfectionist. I say we get what we can when we can. And if there are Republicans who are saying, you know, we'll give you this, I say you take it. And the Teamsters have been instrumental in moving in this direction. Do I think this is going to come to a vote? No. I don't think Mike Johnson is going to allow this to come to a vote. I don't think Trump would ever sign it. And I don't know that it gets out of the Senate. But there is some bipartisan support. And look, some of the big unions, the Teamsters, the electrical workers, the UFCW, the United Food and Commercial Workers, there are a number of organizations that are saying, hey, we want this. They've emphasized the need for timely contracts so that, you know, maybe they can get better wages, hours, conditions, all of that. Maybe we stop employers exploiting the status quo. Maybe we begin to hold some folks accountable. Now, Donald Norquist said that the right of workers to form a union and collectively bargain is crucial to improving wages and working conditions. Stauber, former union organizer, Republican, called it a real voice at the negotiating table for workers. It's got bipartisan backing. There is a growing consensus that there should be changes to our existing labor laws. Question then comes, because Republicans for a while have been making some bit of overtures, and understand, O'Brien's been the guy who's brought them into the fold. So good or bad, however you see this, there are some Republicans who are moving in that direction. And it's my view, and this is one of those weird moments, It's my view, you take what you can get, but be very careful. Because I really don't trust the likes of Bernie Moreno, the car salesman, or Josh Hawley. I don't. What I see it as is a way to get into union dollars that had been Democratic dollars, that had been for more liberal, more societal change. My fear is this takes us in a direction where we're talking about business unionism again. Unions are transactional. What do I get? I only care about wages and hours. I don't care about the conditions under which society is operating. And we've been through this. The 90s were ripe with business unionism, which is how we got neoliberal Democrats. I believe in movement unionism. I believe in worker power. I don't care about red hat, blue hat. I don't care about who you voted for. I care about bringing people together and pushing for real reforms. If this is the beginning of that, great. But the fear still comes back to the Hollies of the world, the Morenos of the world, the Republicans who have signed on to this. It's not about helping workers. It's about gaining power. Now, you may remember I talked about this a couple months back because it moved in the Senate. Holly was the first guy to introduce it. Co-sponsors Cory Booker, Gary Peters, Moreno, and Merkley of Oregon. You got some people on this. Getting the 60 votes in the Senate, I don't think so. Because look, you know, big business doesn't want it. Employer associations don't want it. The ABC contractors definitely don't want it. And they've got deep, deep pockets with lots of money. So we'll see. I can't imagine that Donald Trump is going to sign this. Now, as a messaging bill, I think this is all on the right path. We're talking about pushing for workers' rights, for collective bargaining. We're talking about moving in the good direction. 2026, this could be a big issue. But do I see it coming to the floor before that? No, I just don't. We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. I have been wrong once before. I'm kidding. We'll see. I'm hopeful. It would be great to see any kind of labor law reform or step forward, even with a broken NLRB. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day that leading Southern textile employers met together in Greenville, North Carolina. They met to plan a coordinated response to the national textile strike. The Great Depression had ravaged the textile industry. Workers were subject to the, quote, stretch out. Fewer workers were expected to work at a faster pace to produce the same amount of products. Work in textile mills was already grueling. The stretch out made conditions even more unbearable. Fed up, 20,000 Southern workers walked off the job in July. From there, the numbers grew. On Labor Day, 65,000 workers in North Carolina joined the strike. Strikers confronted scabs and moved to close down mills not participating in the strike. They also disrupted railroad traffic. In response, the National Guard was called out against the strikers. Violence erupted between the strikers and armed police and strikebreakers throughout the South and New England. The Southern owners decided it was time to marshal their own response to the strike. According to historian Jeremy Brecker, an army of 10,000 National Guardsmen was mobilized in Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, and Mississippi, supplemented by 15,000 armed deputies. But despite this show of force, the strike grew. More than 400,000 textile workers had walked off the job. In response, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's administration declared that the working conditions and wages in the industry should be studied. Although there were no guarantees for improvement, union leaders called off the strike. Much to the anger of many rank-and-file union members, one of the largest worker actions in U.S. history and one of the most important uprisings of Southern labor was ended.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So evidently, four people were arrested in the U.K. There was a projection of an image onto Windsor Castle. Evidently, the image was of Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. But four people were arrested just as Trump began his state visit to the UK. So I'm sure that can't make him happy. But what I guess could make him happy, on Tuesday, Kash Patel was testifying in front of the Senate. And I could swear I heard some red hats exploding, because Cash, well, he dropped the big one. Evidently, there's nothing. There's no credible evidence whatsoever that anyone but Jeffrey Epstein did anything ever. No one else. No one else touched the children. Jeffrey Epstein. And threw Alex Acosta under the bus as well, which probably deservedly so. But this is one of those things where you go, you sure? You positive? Nothing? Because I remember all kinds of right-wing voices saying that Bill Clinton was on the list. I remember hearing that there were all these names. There were lots of them. And I guess I shouldn't say them now, because we've got the FBI saying there was no one. Maybe Bill Clinton can sue me now for saying that the right said he was on it. I don't know if he was or not. I know he was flying on the plane. I know a lot of them were. But evidently, according to Cash, it was only Jeffrey Epstein who trafficked girls. And they were only for him. He didn't share. Yeah. We buy in any of that? And because here's the weird part. This is the weird part of this. If that's true, if it is true that it was only Epstein, that nobody else did anything wrong, why is it taking so long to get to this? I thought there was a list that was on Pam Bondi's desk. Why all of the redactions and the subterfuge? Why all of the weird, kind of rollout? Why? And this is where I reach out to my red hat friends. You've been duped. If this is true, can you ever believe anything that the right tells you again? Because I know people who voted for Trump solely on the fact that he was going to expose all of the pedophiles. That, Democrats eat babies. And there was all kinds of weird comments that this was going to be it. This was the cracking of the pedophile ring. And now we find out it was just one guy. Now, the guy who, owned the island and a bunch of people came for, with, there, to. You buying it? And it's one of those things where you got to go, Cash, how much? How much was your soul? I can't say that either, because now, I guess in Trump's world, questioning a political leader, you can be sued for defamation now. Only if you question them. And this is the weird spot that we're in. You got a guy who is now the head of the FBI, who I don't trust. Not even a little bit. Not that I trust many of them before, but I really don't trust him. Also, during the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, Cash got a little beaten up for his handling of the investigation of the murder of Kirk. Took some grief over that, as he should. he's bad at his job. And I'm still waiting for that Bongo guy, Bongino, I believe his name is, I'm waiting for him to do something, to say something, because he made his name on the pedophile ring. He made his bones. He made his millions duping the audience into going, we're going to go get those pedophiles. I wonder if he's going to chime in. I wonder if there's anything. I don't know. You can't throw Dear Leader under the bus. Now, what we're finding out is Trump is saying that the Republicans are going to hold a midterm convention. You know what this is going to be, don't you? This is going to be the canonizing of Charlie Kirk. This is going to be where they use him as their martyr, because it's what they've got to run on. Evidently going to have a mini convention for the midterm, which is just going to be a Trump love fest. It's just going to be him giving speeches and then people coming and kissing and bowing and worshiping and writing checks. This is one of those weird moments. And I go back to something my grandfather said years and years ago, and I've said it on this program many, many times. If a rich guy takes a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. If a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to invest in something, you better figure out how it's going to affect you. So this midterm should be a blue wave, given the fact that the economy is not doing great, the fact that we're literally snatching people off the streets that, you know, nobody I've talked to thought was possible, not even my red hat friends. I actually had one of them tell me, I didn't believe you. I thought you were just hair on fire, Chicken Little, sky is falling. But they're doing everything you said they were going to do. And they are. And they're going to do more, and it's going to get worse. But this convention, this midterm convention, which I guess now is going to maybe potentially start being a thing. Democrats had an idea that Republicans stole. There you go. We'll see. We'll see how this plays out. It's disheartening. And finally, the end of the month on the way. It looks like that Democrats are maybe going to find a spine on this, and that you had some of them saying that they opposed the Republican stopgap spending plan that would help get the government past the 30th of September. We're weeks away. There aren't many days left to do the work. Is a shutdown possible? And is it already happening? I think Trump wants it. I think the Republicans want it, because it just gets them one more step closer to being able to privatize and destroy government. And I think Democrats know that as well. So they're in a weird spot. This is one of those death of a thousand paper cuts, or just rip the Band-Aid off. I'm in the rip the Band-Aid off category. I'm in the place where, you know what? We either negotiate and you start helping people, you start giving a little on some of this stuff, or we're going to shut it down. I think that is something that you're going to have to do. But we'll see. And this is where I've been a little harsh on Democrats over the years, because they're not the most steely spined. Because I do believe they don't want to burn the house down. Whereas I know Republicans want to burn the house down. They're the arsonists with the new lighter. They desperately want to burn things down. And Democrats just want to lead. Good governance. Help people. We'll see. I want to hear your thoughts. Should there be a shutdown? Should Democrats go, look, you're in charge. You control the House, the Senate, the White House. It's all on you. It's all on you guys. You have the power. And just sit back and let them lead. Want to hear it? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Why was former CDC Director Susan Meneris fired after just 1 month on the job? That was the focus of a Senate hearing today. Senator Bernie Sanders summarizing the testimony of Meneris.
Dr. Meneris was fired because she refused to act as a rubber stamp to implement Secretary Kennedy's dangerous agenda to substantially limit the use of safe and effective vaccines that would endanger the lives of the American people and people throughout the world.
In a statement, an HHS spokesperson said the director was dismissed because she, quote, acted maliciously to undermine the president's agenda. The Federal Reserve cutting rates by a quarter of a percentage point. Fed Chair Jerome Powell says the slowing jobs market is the main reason. Police say three police officers died today. Two more are hospitalized in critical condition after a shooting in York County, Pennsylvania. They were attempting to serve a warrant. Authorities say the shooter's dead and there's no active threat. This is ABC News. The Trump administration.